The Art of N.C. Wyeth. For generations of Americans, N.C. Wyeth's book illustrations defined what adventure and drama looked like. In Treasure Island, Robinson Crusoe, Robin Hood, and others, the characters pop off the page, grab the viewer, and spark the imagination. But N.C. Wyeth had mixed feelings about his work as an illustrator and longed to be taken seriously as an artist apart from his work on books and advertising. A new retrospective exhibit explores Wyeth's career, demonstrates his broad range as a painter, and examines how his work reflects cultural norms and myths of his day. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We discuss N.C. Wyeth's legacy with two curators who have focused on his work and his grandson, the artist Jamie Wyeth. What does N.C. Wyeth mean to you? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. N.C. Wyeth's art and legacy loom large in Maine, and his work is currently featured in a major retrospective at the Portland Museum of Art. Today, we're going to discuss what set N.C. Wyeth apart as a painter and illustrator, as well as the patriarch of a prominent artistic family. This show is part of Maine Calling's ongoing commitment to coverage of topics and people who are iconic to Maine. Joining me from the studios of WNYC in New York is Jessica May, chief curator at the Portland Museum of Art, who co-curated the current exhibit, which is called N.C. Wyeth, New Perspectives. On the line with us is Jamie Wyeth, a renowned artist as well as grandson of N.C. Wyeth and son of Andrew Wyeth. And he's calling us today from Tenants Harbor and here in Portland. In the studio with me, Michael Komanecki, the chief curator at the Farnsworth Art Museum in Rockland. As always, we want to hear from you. Is there anything about N.C. Wyeth's life or work you've always been curious about? Do you have a favorite painting or illustration? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, a different number than the pledge number. It is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. What a treat to have all three of you with us today. I'm going to start with you, Jamie. I know you were born a year after your grandfather died, so you never knew him personally, but I'm curious what your dad and mom told you about your grandfather. What was he like?
Well, in an odd sense, he almost had more influence on me than my own father. I was just, his studio was high up on a hill above my father's studio and our home. And so I, as a child, would wander up, and here was this amazing building full of his illustrations at that point, and all these costumes and cutlasses and guns. And so it was thrilling to me, and almost, much more exciting than really what my father was doing. I'd walk down the hill after spending an hour with these things, and there would be my father painting a dead bird in the studio. You know, that was boring.
What was your grandfather like? Did he have a big personality?
As I understand, a very big personality, and really sort of took over the whole family and led, and, you know, of course, had these children who all painted and played music and so forth. So he created this amazing atmosphere in his house in Chaz Ford. So he was really bigger than life.
Jessica, you write in the catalog, N.C. Wyeth is one of the best loved and yet least understood artists of his generation. What do you mean by that?
It's been since 1972 that there's been a full retrospective and full recounting of the career of N.C. Wyeth. And so what we've seen since then is the perception of him for some people as the man who is the father of Andy Wyeth. We see some people knowing him as the illustrator of Treasure Island or one of the other Scribner's Illustrated Classics from the 19-teens. And we see other people yet again who maybe haven't heard his name before, which is just astonishing given the scale of his fame and his influence as a part of early 20th century American culture.
I want to bring you into the conversation, Michael. You know, we have Jamie Wyeth on the line with us. Obviously, so many people know Andrew Wyeth's work. What do the Wyeths have in common other than this immense talent? What are the threads that, as you sort of live with their work every day, come back to you again and again?
Well, you're asking me a question while Jamie's listening, so I guess I should be a little careful.
So you have to be nice, right?
And how I respond. Well, it's an artist family that spans three generations, each artist having their very own distinctive style and interest in the kind of subjects that they've chosen. There are few other families of artists in the history of American art that would have a similar position. N.C. established himself as the great illustrator of early 20th century American art. Andy obviously carved out an entirely different career as a fine artist and gaining critical attention and selling work from his very first shows in New York in the 1930s. And Jamie has continued in a tradition, but in a very different and distinctive way in creating his own art, different from both his father and grandfather, yet inevitably incorporating some elements of their life's work in his own.
Jamie, when you look at your grandfather's work, do you see, are your favorite paintings different than other people's favorite paintings? Do you see things that maybe members of the general public don't?
Well, I think so. But what's so interesting to me about this exhibition is when I first saw it in Chatsford, it was at the museum there, it looks like a group show. It looks like an exhibition mm-hmm. by 10 painters. I mean, I've never seen a man who experimented more than N.C. Wyeth, completely changing his style, his approach. I think for the viewer, it is just fascinating, and it really was an eye-opener to me. And yes, I have favorites, but then, and the irony with me is my favorites really are sort of his illustrations, which he sort of denigrated and was depressed over. And the irony to me is I think it's really some of his best work. But I love the things he tried, the easel paintings and so forth.
You know, it's so interesting to me. You said that I had the privilege of seeing the show on Friday. And that struck me, too, how some of the paintings seemed like impressionists and others could have been a Cezanne and still others were, these watercolors. And this is not usual for an artist of this caliber, is it, to have experiment with so many different genres and do all of them so well?
I know. It's highly unusual. And he was a force that I think he felt his illustrations, these were sort of workaday things he had to do. And so when he had the time to paint on for his own self, he broke free and tried so many different approaches.
Jessica.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, we tend to assign value to artists who establish a recognizable style that carries them through and they deepen that style and they change it a little bit. But, you know, with Wyeth, you see this incredible range of experimental spirit. And to my mind, the strength of, you know, his legacy is actually as somebody who was able to master style after style after style and indulge his curiosity as an artist about how to make images sing in various ways.
It's so interesting to me. I have the catalog in front of me and flipping through the catalog and our producer, Cindy Hahn, and I both agreed that reproduced, you don't have a sense of the luminosity and the colors, even though it's a beautiful catalog. What really strikes me, and I'll turn this to you, Michael, is how N.C. Wyeth captures Maine, looking at the painting of Eight Bells, the bright and fair. I mean, we have all seen a sky like that over Penobscot Bay.
As did N.C. I mean, that site is a spectacularly beautiful one, and I visited there this summer, as it turns out, with a photographer who was making photographs of that place for another project. And it became obvious, standing there that day, that the sky that N.C. painted was real. It wasn't an exaggeration. It's really quite something. I guess I have a slightly different perspective from that of Jamie and Jessica regarding the changes in N.C. style over a long career. Having been a curator of European art as often as I have been one of American art and studying artists like Rembrandt or Rubens or Monet, much closer to our own time, those artists also continued to push themselves to find new ways of expressing themselves, often in response to the art that was around them. So N.C.'s changes don't strike me quite the same way. Unusual for an illustrator, as N.C. was primarily, to reach out, to struggle to become a fine artist, which is something he clearly wanted to do, that's where the story is slightly different.
Mm. And let's return to that idea, because that is one of the things that's really well explored in this show, and also that has been written about a great deal, is how, Jamie, your grandfather longed to be taken seriously as a fine artist and not as an illustrator, but you said his illustrations are among your favorite work, and I think probably millions of Americans would agree with you. I think there's some irony that he was conflicted by his work as an illustrator, yet he reached so many more people than probably any other fine artist in history. You know, I mean, it's really, I remember talking to my father, who's now gone, and talking about how much he treasured the illustrations in his books as a boy.
Well, exactly. And you have to think of the time that NC was doing these. There was certainly no television. Film was just beginning. The talkies hadn't even started. It was silent film. So he sort of was the banner carrier of the golden age of illustration. I mean, that was the visual that people, as they read the books and whatnot, that's what they saw were these illustrations. And I always use this anecdote. Years ago, the New York Public Library owns all the Robin Hood ones of his, and they had to re-clean them and had an opening. And this 90-year-old woman was wheeled up to me and said, "Oh, Mr. Wyeth, I'm so thrilled to meet you." And I said, "Oh, well, thank you very much." And she said, "Yes, I grew up in your illustrations of Treasure Island and Robin Hood." So you must have thought the Fountain of Youth was in Chad's Ford. Thank you very much, and went on my way.
You just thanked her. You didn't disabuse her of her notion. But Jessica, talk to me about this conflict. I mean, it really, looking back, what a shame.
Yeah, I have to say, and I tried to, it was difficult actually to write about this in the catalog because, you know, I didn't know him, and Jamie, you and I have broken bread together, but I don't know your family so well, so I tried to be very sensitive in writing about it. It seems to me that based on the evidence of the letters and the memories of the people who knew him well, that there was this kind of lingering sadness in him that he had been cast to one side of an art-making divide. At the same time, what we see historically is actually he may have exaggerated the extent of that divide, or he may have felt it in a way that was, he may have exaggerated his own feelings in that respect, because we see moments in which he's very much invited into the mainstream of American painting. He was invited to show in exhibitions. He was invited to participate in competitions, and he was most certainly welcome in a lot of places, not everywhere, but a lot of places. So I leave this project sort of having this sense of longing for someone to see his own success in his own time and on his own terms.
Michael, you talked about your studying American art. What influence did NCYS work have on other American painters and artists, just in his own family?
Well, that's a harder question to answer because of the very thing that Jessica and Jamie have been talking about, and that is that NC carved out his career primarily as an illustrator, and he certainly impacted many other illustrators who followed in his wake. And as Jamie has mentioned, he's probably the top of his generation of American illustrators. I mean, mm-hmm. Howard Pyle, his teacher, Frank Schoonover, there were others, but no other illustrator of that period attained that level of recognition. He had a very fruitful and remunerative relationship with Scribner's, so his impact was, I think, as you suggested, was on the broader American public. Now, I have to admit, I've never been a fan of the books that NC illustrated. I don't know, I was a teenager, I was more interested in reading a biography of Joe DiMaggio than Treasure Island. it's just a literature that I was never attracted to. But one of the things that's so important about understanding NC Wyeth, and this is something Christine Podmaniski writes about, is that NC was fastidious about reading the texts that he was selected to illustrate and choosing which scene that he wanted to illustrate. Mm-hmm. In addition to having all the historical accoutrements of costume and so forth, he really sought a dramatic moment. And his illustrations in the books themselves appear on the opposite page of the text that they are intended to illustrate. So there's this link that he clearly understood and took advantage of. I mean, that was a real talent.
That's such an important point, Michael, because I think one of the things that I learned both from Christine Podmanitsky, the co-curator of this project, as well as from essayist David Lubin, is that he was a great reader. I mean, if he hadn't been a painter, he could have been an editor, because he chose these moments in the text that were sort of quieter moments, and he made those the moments where he could explore the full range of sort of dramatic potential and emotional capacity of the figures that he was painting. He didn't always choose the most exciting moment in the chapter. In fact, sometimes he threw away lines that are almost like throwaway lines in order to bring about a more kind of resonant image. He was a fabulous reader in that respect.
We are talking. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Jessica. It's sort of fascinating. My grandmother gave me years ago all the books that Scribner sent him, the galleys, before he had illustrated it, and he would read these, go through, and mark what he wanted to do the paintings of. And so often the choices were something way before something exciting happened or after, not the dramatic things and whatnot. He lifted things, you know, not the most obvious part of the book, which I think made them all come even more alive.
It's such a smart move.
What a pleasure it is to be talking to the three of you. We're talking about N.C. Wyeth, the artist whose retrospective exhibit is on display now at the Portland Museum of Art, also at the Farnsworth Museum. There's a Wyeth family exhibit. So we are going to come back to this conversation. We'd love to hear from you. What does N.C. Wyeth mean to you? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
This is member-supported Maine Public Radio, 1-800-866-1475, or mainepublic.org. Going back to more Maine Calling in just a couple of minutes, but Jennifer Rooks and the crew, they are pausing to give you the opportunity to take part in the making of the show.
That's right.
Yeah, coming up, you can be part of the show, but this is how you can help make that show happen. When you become a member at 1-800-866-1475, I am Nick Woodward, TV production manager, joined by Sue Tran, director of corporate support here at Maine Public.
Yes, hi. I was thinking, as we were listening to Maine Calling and thinking about what Jessica was saying about N.C. Wyeth illustrating the quieter moments in the books, the chapters, you know, it made me actually think of public radio. It made me think about, yes, we cover the big news, you know, the public impeachment hearings, for example. We cover the big news, but we also cover the quieter moments to provide perspective and resonance on those quieter moments. And that is journalism that is worth supporting. And you can do that now at 800-866-1475.
Well, and the conversation we're hearing right now, a civil conversation of, you know, that's something that is, seems more rare out there in the media, but that is something you get day in, day out, hour after hour here on member-supported public radio. And again, with Maine Calling, you are part of this conversation. We are discussing the connections here today, the connections between the great Wyeth family, the Maine, the arts, with the museums. And we're connecting it with you. How does this affect you? Jennifer Rooks asked you, think about what it means to you. Well, we are taking this moment to have you also think about what public radio means to you.
That's right.
And public radio depends on you. You help make it happen. Won't you be part of our Grow Together Fall membership campaign right now by calling 1-800-866-1475.
That's right. You can also go online at mainepublic.org to pledge your support. We are just going to take a few moments more from Maine Calling before we go back into the program. But think about Maine Calling and think about, I know myself, how many times in a week do I say when I'm in a conversation with someone, oh, you know, they just did a really good Maine Calling on that. And, you know, so many of Maine Public Radio's programs offer that kind of, you know, support in my conversations, frankly.
Right.
Whether it's N.C. Wyeth or, planning for healthcare, the topics that are covered on Maine Calling are just so varied and so important to the people of Maine. And you can support that work at 1-800-866-1475.
And anyone that knows me knows I'm a sucker for meridians and time balls and longitude. And that's why when the daylight Daylight Savings Time episode.
Yeah.
Also, an especially fun one, again, the Maine Calling mm-hmm. crew, the variety of shows they have, whether it's conversations, say, with Senator Angus King, conversations with the spiritualists and mediums.
Oh, that was a good one.
That was a great one. Yeah. Or Bat Conservation. So many great programs are here. They're all made possible by you. So, whether it's just Maine Calling mm-hmm. or the other, may I say, bazillion things.
That's right.
On Maine Public Radio, it all happens. It all starts with you. 1-800-866-1475.
1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to join, to become a member, to grow together with Maine Public. You can also do that online at mainepublic.org. Your support at any level truly makes a difference.
You can connect with Maine Calling coming up in just a few seconds. You can also connect with Maine Public by becoming a member. Call 1-800-866-1475. Head to mainepublic.org. Do what you can for the station that is part of your life. You will enjoy Maine Calling even more, knowing that you are helping to make it possible. 1-800-866-1475 or at mainepublic.org. And thank you.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are discussing the legacy of artist N.C. Wyeth and his life in Maine. Joining me, Jamie Wyeth, a prominent artist himself, the grandson of N.C. Wyeth. He's calling in from Tenants Harbor. Michael Komanecki is in the studio with me. He's chief curator of the Farnsworth Art Museum. And Jessica May is chief curator at the Portland Museum of Art. She is joining us from the New York Bureau of NPR. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Facebook page. I'm going to go to Greg, who's calling from Tamworth, New Hampshire. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. A few things here, actually. Unlike Michael, I was very much enchanted by NC's illustrations and the books when I was young. I had no interest in Joe DiMaggio. I was much more interested in Ted Williams. My mother was a fine artist, and she brought them to us, and I have loved them then and ever since. A couple of other things. My family lives in Bremen, Maine, and the next town up is Waldoboro. And in the last year or two of his life, I believe Andrew was by the river in Waldoboro painting, and I've always wondered what happened to those paintings. Have they been published or not? And so I'd be curious to for Jamie to speak to that. And also the story of NC's death with, I believe, his grandson or grandnephew is just heartbreaking. I've never been able to tell it without breaking up in the middle of the tale, and I don't know if you want to have that on air, but possibly.
Well, Jamie, why don't I have you start with the Waldoboro paintings? Is this something you know about?
Well, my father painted around Waldoboro quite a bit, and Alna and all that area, Damariscotta. And so there was a meeting house in Waldoboro where he did a number of paintings and temperas. But to know specifically which ones, I really don't know myself, but the Andrew Wyeth office and the Brandywine Museum would certainly know and would be able to identify it.
Mm. Which of you wants to talk about the heartbreaking end to N.C. Wyeth's life? Jessica.
Well, I was going to say, you can't see me, but I've got my finger on my nose. This was another thing that was an interesting challenge to write about because, you know, there's very little to know other than that it was a deeply heartbreaking and too early passage for both NC and his grandson.
And for those who don't know, there was a car that stalled on railroad tracks.
Correct. He was out apparently sort of doing errands and had his very young, maybe 2-3-year-old grandson in the car with him. It stalled on some train tracks in the town of Chatsford, and the train did hit the car and both perished immediately, as I understand it. So a truly tragic passing.
I can just jump in. The other part of the story is that they had stopped by a field, and there were two mm-hmm. farmers who were cutting hay with scythes and then bundling them into shocks of hay the old-fashioned way. And NC turned to his grandson and said his name and said, take a good look at this. You'll never see this again. Oh, here I go. Mm-hmm.
Jamie, is there anything you want to add? Yeah. I mean, what a horrible pall to hang over your entire family.
Well, it was, and of course, my father had a huge effect on him, and then the years after, he ended up painting on the farm right next to the railroad crossing, which I think had such significance to him that he sort of imbued it in his paintings of the Kerner farm. So it, I mean, you know, my family's a little crazy. We just paint all our emotions, and in this case, it was his father's tragic death.
Greg, thanks so much for your call. We're going to go to a JB who's calling from Wiscasset. Hi, JB. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for doing this program. I'm listening with intensity there. I was unaware of his death. I know he was born in Massachusetts, Needham, and moved to Maine. I'm not sure how old, but I also am from Ireland, but I grew up in Ireland, came to Boston, and even though it's coastal, you don't get the sense of being on the coast when you're there. It's obviously a big city, but then I come to coastal Maine a few years ago, Demerscott and Wiscasset, etc., and I hear his grandson there, Jamie, talking about Waldoboro, and I'm fascinated because I've also been visually inspired here, and all. I was not a photographer. I did some writing in the past, and I did art in high school and liked it, but didn't take it up in college. And I like the way people are visually inspired. And I think these phones, you know, high-tech phones, really good ones, you can get amazing images. And I think art is sort of coming back. By the way, his illustrations were very popular in England and Ireland, Scotland, et cetera, especially in the English-speaking world. And I like his coastal art, but I wouldn't be an expert. I would like to go to the exhibition down there in Portland. I hope to get down to see that, but it's an amazing story. And speaking of grandchildren, a friend of mine around here is Bill Gilchrist, and he's the grandson of a significant artist also. And I guess I looked him up once on the phone, and I found his grandfather. Said, "Are you related to that guy?" He said, "That's my granddad." So it's a small world.
Well, JB, thank you so much for your call. And isn't that interesting, the popularity of those books in England and Ireland? Go ahead, Michael.
I wanted to return to something that we talked about in the first segment, and that has to do with NC's long-term striving to be recognized as a fine artist, as a painter. Mm-hmm. And he had the pleasure of doing a small exhibition of NC's, well, you would call them landscape and seascape paintings. Mostly from the Wyeth family collection, and it was really eye-opening in some respects. His painting of the Teal family, for example, a large vertical canvas of the family standing on the shore, and a rather bleak picture of this hard-working family trying to make a living as fishermen and doing all that entails. What was striking to me is if I had shown an image of that painting to almost any of my colleagues, art historians and curators who were specialists in early 20th century or mid 20th century American art, they would have immediately recognized it as a significant and moving regionalist subject painting from the 1930s. But I can guarantee you that almost none of them would have recognized that it was by N.C. Wyeth, which to me signified that N.C. had a range of talents that with this show are probably more visible than they may have been. But it's an interesting thing to think about what he might have been had he chosen not to be an illustrator, but to have been a painter.
JB, thanks for your call. And, you know, I'm wondering, one thing that the Portland Museum of Art show is not able to show, and for good reason, is some of the murals. And, these gigantic, spectacular, colorful murals. And Jamie, I know that you've spent so much time in your grandfather's studio. You have some sense of what it took to paint those murals, for which your grandfather's also well known. Enlighten us a little bit. How does one do that?
It is remarkable. I mean, in his studio, there's a very high ceiling part of the studio, and he would hang these canvases. Often they were 50 feet high, and do them in sections. And my father always said, as he would work on, let's say, one part of the painting, he'd have to walk back 30 feet to see how the effect, what it would look like. And my father said it sort of wore a path in the wooden floor. He went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. When you think you're working in such a scale, it's just staggering.
It's such an interesting thing about, you know, we in Maine are particularly sensitive to the value of the artist studios. But you get into NCYS studio and you realize that over the years he added on and added on and added on in order to accommodate these larger and larger commissions. It's really remarkable to think of him scaling up from some of the smallest paintings in the show or, you know, the size of a large dinner plate or a placemat at a family dinner, and then to imagine him working at these scales that are the size of architecture is again a testament to that range.
Jessica, one of the things we haven't talked about yet is the way in which the retrospective exhibit is held at the Portland Museum of Art is mm-hmm. that you've invited others from very specific perspectives to write their reflection and comments on some of the paintings, and some of them are kind of, I don't know if the word would be harsh, but really mm-hmm. cast a negative light on some of the subject matter. Tell me about why the Portland Museum of Art decided to do that and what you're hoping people will come away with.
Yeah, we worked with seven different people, all of whom had expertise in a different area. And we asked, and all of them have a connection to our region, and we asked all of them to pick a couple of works and really just spend some time reflecting on them. And from that, we distilled down some what we call another perspective. Our goal for a long time at the PMA has been to kind of think about how the museum could speak more openly and more equitably with our audiences so that we're not just sort of presenting facts from on high about art, but instead really listening and giving people the opportunity to learn about art by also reflecting on their own experiences. So for us, this exhibition offered a really wonderful opportunity to speak about some of the historical complexity in NCYS work by allowing more people with different range of insight and expertise to reflect on that work with us and alongside our own curatorial vision.
And Michael, part of that is the depiction of Native Americans in the paintings, which really was representative of his time, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've spent, I don't know, the past 10 or 15 years or so of my own career on the art of the American West, where depictions of Native Americans are much more prevalent in the late 19th and early 20th century, often in this a kind of romantic trope of the vanishing race of Indians.
Correct.
Well,
mm-hmm.
if you spend time in Indian country, and you don't have to go out west to do that, you'll find out something surprising. Indians are still here, and Indians is a term they themselves often use, Native American being, I suppose, a more neutral way of describing the indigenous people of the United States. I found that an interesting component of the interpretation that was provided about NC's depictions. And indeed, they're common. They have a great deal in common with how other artists of that time depicted indigenous people in the United States. And it's important to remember that NC, and almost all the paintings that were shown, they're illustrations to a text that he was
right.
given to make images for.
Right.
They're not necessarily his own choices about how to depict Native Americans.
Jamie, before we go to a break, anything you want to add to this part of the conversation?
Well, there's been a bit of a controversy over this due to a review which said that sort of charged NC West being sort of racist and whatnot, that the black person is not depicted and so forth. And as Michael said, it really was the text. I mean, mm-hmm. he would have had a difficult time turning John Silver, Long John Silver, into a Native American or black man. So I think it was a period of his time, and I think it's sort of absurd, this charge. But anyway, but it makes it interesting. I think it gets the pot boiling. Why not?
We have calls coming in, questions and comments about the work of NC Wyeth, but we are going to take another quick break. If you would like to join the conversation, call now, because we're getting toward the end of the hour. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
And you're listening to Maine Public Radio, Maine Calling, providing a perspective and conversation on a variety of subjects, from art to politics to public utilities projects and more. To support that kind of work, to join as a member of Maine Public Radio, call 1-800-866-1475 or go online to mainepublic.org.
And Sue, I went down the hall, down to the main calling den down mm-hmm. there to look on the big board to see what's coming up. Great episodes, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But the ones that stood out to me, the gift guide episode, I love that one.
Every year. That's such a good one.
Yep, Maine food traditions, another. I love when they talk mm-hmm. about food. And I think tomorrow, unless I'm misreading this, the classical music team is going to be in there.
Oh,
remember,
great.
The Maine Public Classical Network, also another service
that's
made
right.
possible by your support when you call 1-800-866-1475 or head to mainepublic.org. That one call, Susan, does so much.
It really does. It makes a difference. You know, when you think about Maine Calling, the number of experts on so many different subjects that come into the studio each and every day for a 1 o'clock program. And these experts, roundtable discussion, really great questions from our Maine Calling hosting team, Jennifer Rooks, Keith Shortall, Cindy Hahn. But what's really amazing is they connect those experts with you.
Mm-hmm.
You can call in and ask a question. You can email or tweet and have your burning question answered by these experts about the topic you are interested in. Where else are you going to find that? That is such a public radio mm-hmm. thing, right? And you can support that kind of work at 1-800-866-1475.
And we are going to that in just under 2 minutes.
That's
that
right.
is plenty of time for you to call 1-800-866-1475. Dr. Luke, Megan, Kurt, all the other volunteers, they are here ready to take your call. And hey, they can tell you about some of the great thank you gifts. As you know, what's the pledge drive without thank you gifts? A couple of just cool ones to talk about real quick. The I Love Public Radio tote bag for your one-time $90 gift or a $7.50 monthly evergreen gift, or Susan, a mug, the great NPR little thermal mug, $10 a month as an evergreen friend.
It's such a great opportunity. There's also the Maine Public snow hats.
That hats came in handy today.
That's right. It's a good time of year to start thinking about knit caps. Those are also available for your pledge of support at 1-800-866-1475. We are going back into the programming in just about a minute, but I did want to mention that we are here a bit earlier than we had planned to
right.
do this mm-hmm. Grow Together membership campaign. We were originally planning to start tomorrow, but we felt that providing you with our live coverage mm-hmm. of the public impeachment hearings was too important to have interrupted by pledge. So that's why we are here a little earlier. But we hope that you'll tune in tomorrow as well
right.
as we were covering this.
Here to serve you.
That's right.
With what we think is the most important information of the day. That's mm-hmm. what the live coverage will be about starting
yeah.
tomorrow. And that's also made possible by you. Call 1-800-866-1475. You make Maine Calling possible. You make live coverage of important things
that's
possible.
Right.
You make it all possible. 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about artist N.C. Wyeth, who is the subject of a major retrospective at the Portland Museum of Art. It has traveled here from the Brandywine Museum. Joining me, Michael Komanecki of the Farnsworth Art Museum, Jessica May with the Portland Museum of Art, and Jamie Wyeth, an American realist, painter, and grandson of N.C. Wyeth. So lucky to have all three of you with us today. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Michael, very quickly tell me about the exhibit right now at the Farnsworth.
Well, we have a strong collection of the works by all the members of the Wyeth family, and we have changing exhibitions, particularly of Andrew Wyeth's work from the Wyeth Study Center, which is part of the museum. But we also have galleries devoted to our own collection. And at the moment, we have works up by N.C., Andrew, and Jamie Wyeth, and other members of the Wyeth, the very talented and large Wyeth family of painters.
We'll go to Sally, who's calling from York. Hi, Sally. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention years and years ago, could be 40 years ago, I read a book, wonderful, wonderful book about N.C. Wyeth called Letters Home. And it starts just before he goes to Chadford to go to the art school. And it was compiled by, I believe, Jamie's mother. And it really, really gives a clear picture of his frustration at working as an illustrator and not finding time, or, you know, being able to find time to do what he would have considered fine art, because he had a family to support. And so that's what he was doing. And it's a shame that his life ended before he really had the opportunity to paint more for himself.
Jamie, I'm sure you've read those letters.
I have. They were put together by my mother, Betsy, and they're remarkable. As she said, it gives a true portrait of his struggle and so forth. But, again, back to my thing that, you know, I think the illustrations are the major work. This notion that illustrating is sort of beneath fine art, I think is absurd. I mean, Degas was an illustrator. Rembrandt illustrated the Bible, I think great work comes out of illustration, but for some reason my grandfather just felt that it was beneath it, and I don't quite understand. I've never quite understood it.
One of my favorite parts of those letters, if I can pop in, is the letters that he wrote while he was working on Treasure Island, which to me are such a great bit of evidence of how much joy he actually took in the act of working. Like, you know, we all humans, I think, have sensitivity to criticism in some capacity. And, you know, I think certainly it's fair to say that for many artists, the experience of being opened up so publicly to criticism must have been very hard. But you also read those moments in the letters where he's talking about really getting into a subject, and there's pure joy just popping off the page, certainly when he was working on the Treasure Island letters, and that not exclusively, but certainly during that time. So I think the record is really mixed in terms of what the experience of actually painting was like for him. And I always want to kind of remember the joy as well as the frustration.
No, but my father would tell me that he'd go up to his studio in the morning before everybody was awake in the house and lay in a painting, I mean, do the drawing and so forth, come back down, cook breakfast for all his children and his wife and so forth, and then we'd go back up and then come back for lunch and talk about the smell of gun smoke that's in his studio. And I mean, he just electrified his children, of course. They were just... And the other thing I think is so fascinating, when you think he illustrated... did these paintings, knowing they'd be reproduced like 5x7 illustrations, he did them 30x40 inches. Why these enormous paintings? And I think why my father always said is he wanted them to leap off the page and grab you around the neck, which they certainly did.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, let me ask you this. One of the things I noticed looking at the exhibit and flipping through the catalog here is many of these illustrations, the protagonist is in shadow. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it was just the drama. I mean, we love shadows, and if you look at his work, shadows appear in his landscape paintings and so forth. I mean, it was a method that he loved and used to, I think, tremendous dramatic effect.
And I think Jamie made an important point there. I mean, NC obviously realized that these 40-inch high, 30-inch wide paintings were going to be photographed and reproduced in color on a page that's, I don't know, 6x9 or something like that. So he understood instinctively that the photographic medium used to print these images, although it was the high technology of its day, couldn't reproduce the paintings as they appear to us today. But he pushed the envelope as far as he could, and that was instinct for him, certainly by the time he's doing all these books for Scribner's.
Yeah, it's such an important point, you all, because, you know, obviously if you sort of the historical record in the 1910s in particular, he was pretty ferocious about pushing his own publishers to adopt the best new technologies in reproduction. So he was very aware in the first decade of the 20th century that, you know, that, for instance, his use of the kind of subtleties in the color blue simply would not translate into reproduction for Outing magazine. But a decade later, he knew exactly what he could get away with in terms of publications, and he really pushed and held his editors to a very high standard of reproduction. So I think in some ways, I want to also sort of congratulate N.C. Wyeth, because I think he pushed along the technology of American reproduction in ways that had a positive effect for other artists as well.
We'll go to Charles, who's calling from Glenburn. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I would like to say that I used to admire a painting that was owned by a family in Bangor that was painted by N.C. Wyeth around 1907, and it was entitled Taken in the Pumpkins. And I would say it was his grandfather and a grandson at sunset with a full moon behind them taking pumpkins out of the field. And it was owned by Curtis and Ruth Hutchins on Canusic Avenue in Bangor for years. And I would always admire that photo. And 2 weeks ago would have been most timely. But I'll always remember that photo, or that painting, excuse me.
Well, Charles, thank you for calling. Does anybody here, Jamie, Jessica, Michael, do any of you know this painting?
Oh, yes, very well. It's a wonderful painting.
And Jamie has his own fascination for pumpkins, as I recall.
For anyone who's interested, one of the most amazing resources on the art of N.C. Wyeth is the Brandywine River Museum of Art has the entire catalogue raisonné, so the entire recorded history of Wyeth's painting history online. And you can go into the Brandywine Museum's website and actually search, sometimes even by subject matter, if you don't know the exact title, and you can pull up not only images of the paintings, but often also the curatorial notes, where they were published. Great resource for anyone who's interested in this topic.
Charles, thank you for your call. We have an email from Bruce. What a fabulous exhibit. Spent several hours there last week. I'm a book designer and photographer, so I came with a host of shared interests. Have adored NC's work all my life. At the show, I not only enjoyed seeing the many risks NC took, I also loved the big photo mural of the studio interior. Even though it's a photograph, it feels very painterly in its lighting and expression. Also, the great circular motif with self-portrait at the entrance. Jamie, I agree with Bruce in that seeing photographs of your grandfather's studio are really something. You could sort of stare at the photograph and all the things in that studio forever and ever and ever. Have you ever stood there and painted? Have you ever painted in your grandfather's studio?
I have, actually. I've did a couple of paintings in there. My aunt, who inherited the studio, then gave it to me, and I thought, how could I possibly paint in this vast place? So I ended up giving it to the Brandywine Museum. But it's a wonderful, it's fascinating to go to anybody and for young people to see. You go to the N.C. Wyeth studio, you hear all these costumes, scaffolding for the murals. And then the fascinating thing is then to go to the Andrew Wyeth studio, which is just four walls. There's nothing really in it. And it shows, you know, what is creativity, how it can be approached two different ways. Quite fascinating.
And whose studio does yours resemble?
Like a bomb hit it. It's just a mess. But that's the way I work.
Well, you know, we're almost out of time here, and I'm going to turn this back to you, Jamie Wyeth. When people see this retrospective of your grandfather's, what do you hope they come away with?
Well, just the power of his emotions and the fact and the excitement that he put into these things. I mean, we've talked a bit of how he's depressed over this, depressed over the illustrations. Well, look at them. They leap off the walls. And again, I say it looks like a group show. I can't believe one man created such different sort of diverse paintings.
Well, thank you all so much for being here on this rainy winter day. The voice you just heard, Jamie Wyeth, who, of course, is a renowned artist and the grandson of N.C. Wyeth. Jessica May, chief curator at the Portland Museum of Art, and Michael Komanecki, the chief curator at the Farnsworth Art Museum. We'll have information about both the Farnsworth and the Portland Museum of Art's exhibits on our webpage at maincalling.org. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had additional help from John Keimel, as well as we also have helpful links and resources on the maincalling.org page. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. And you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.